Word of mouth.
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 Well, definitely.
Mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Taylor Quimby in Fort Virginia Prescott. With a beak like a parrot, venom strong enough to dissolve flesh, and in some species, the strength to overpower humans, the octopus is among the most alien-looking of creatures. In captivity, they're quick to pick up on cues and rituals, are playful, and seem to recognize and respond to individuals. In a new book, the naturalist and author Cy Montgomery explores whether octopuses have feelings, consciousness, a soul. Her new book is called The Soul of an Octopus. Virginia spoke with Montgomery in June.
So let's get this out of the way right at the top. I said octopuses, and I found out in your book that that is the proper way to say it.
It is, in fact. I used to love saying octopi, but you can't do that anymore, or the language police will come. Octopus is a Greek word, and I is a Latin ending.
Okay, so octopuses, we've established that. This is a creature that was long feared, you know, the stuff of legends of seamen and fishermen, the kraken, the sea monster. What is it that made them so fearsome?
I think it's because they are so alien. I mean, you would have to go to science fiction or to outer space to find someone so unlike us. And they do have enormous strength. A single sucker on a giant Pacific octopus, which can stretch 2.5 inches, 3 inches across, can lift 30 pounds. And they have 1,600 of them. So they are strong. They are different. They do have venom. There are small octopuses that have serious venom that can kill you, the blue ring octopus. So we tend to fear what we don't understand.
They're so crazy. They have mouths in their armpits. They have black blood. What are some of the other physical attributes of the octopus that you discovered?
Well, you know, we go head, body, limbs. They go body, head, limbs. And what we think should be the head is the place with all of the organs. Their lives are completely unlike ours in that, you know, we have babies when we're younger, and then we live a long time. We're a social species. They tend to be, and we don't know because there's at least 250 species of octopus and we haven't investigated the life ways of all of them, but they tend to be solitary. They are very short-lived, tragically, and they have babies at the end of their lives. So they just have a totally different way of going about life than we do.
Is that what attracted you to them?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I love other minds. This is one reason why I love animals so much. And I love people with other minds. As you know, I did a book about Temple Grandin, mm-hmm. and she's a very famous autistic person. And she'll tell you right off that her autism is responsible for some of her greatest talents. So different brains have amazing talents. And getting to know these other minds is something that's been kind of a quest of mine
throughout my life. Minds is the point here. I mean, one of the big themes of the book is this animal consciousness. Now, this is something that only recently scientists have acknowledged in, you know, birds and dogs and chimps, this kind of idea of the animal mind. Now, in the book, you do warn us about anthropomorphizing, projecting those human attributes upon animals.
Well, and we project attributes upon people all the time. I mean, every one of us who's thought some girl really liked them or wanted to play a game with a little child who started crying, it's really easy to project our own feelings onto someone else, whether they're an animal or a person. But the whole idea of anthropomorphism, I'm so glad you brought that up, Virginia, the idea of projecting human emotions onto animals implies that emotions belong to humans and arose with humans. But if you believe in the Bible, if you believe in evolution, that just makes no sense. Both of these belief systems, which I think don't disagree, tell us that we come from a common ancestor, a common family, and emotions, the ability to feel and think and know, they didn't arise de novo with humans. We inherited them from our ancestors. We're part of that family. And if you look at the brain chemicals that accompany all of our deepest feelings, those same chemicals are found across taxa. Many different animals have them, including octopuses.
Well, at the heart of this is the theory of mind, something you describe. Now, what is that first, and how do octopuses do using theory of mind as a measure?
Well, theory of mind is one of the components of consciousness. And, you know, consciousness is one of those things that people try to study, and it's a very difficult thing to study in that some philosophers and scientists believe there is no such thing. They believe there is no consciousness. But let's pretend that you and I and all of your listeners are, in fact, conscious and we know what it feels like. Okay, one of the components of that, most people agree, is the ability to imagine other minds, minds that are different from our own. And I love imagining that. Now, can an octopus imagine minds that are different from its own? Well, let's look at its life as a creature, a mollusk with no shell, who has to hunt a wide variety of prey and who has to escape an enormous variety of predators. They can change color, they can change shape, they can shoot ink, they can jet through the sea. But they have to decide what to do based on which predator is pursuing them or which prey item they must pursue. And it's my contention that they have to imagine the mind of the bird that's chasing them, or the otter, or the whale, or the fish, because they often change their strategy right in the middle of their escape or pursuit. Oh, didn't work when I shot out that ink. Oh my gosh, I'm going to pour myself down this hole. Wait, I'm going to pretend that I look like a whole bunch of snakes. No, I'm going to grab a coconut and close it around myself and make a little Quonset hut. They can do so many different displays with their chromatophores. They can look like their background, or they can look like something else. And doing all of this, all within less than 0.7 seconds, that demands that they be thinking all the time about what someone else is doing.
Mm-hmm. So thinking, not just reacting.
No. I mean, there's too many things involved here to just react. And they learn stuff. We know this from scientific experiments with animals both in the wild and in captivity. We know, for example, that octopuses recognize individual people. We know this not just from my experience, and I certainly got to know with 4 octopuses who I knew very well that they recognized me, but Dr. Jennifer Mather and Roland Anderson did experiments showing that even when people are dressed identically and when the octopus is just looking up through the water at them, they recognize individuals. They tested them. Some of the people that they met touched them with a bristly stick, and others always gave them a delicious fish. And the octopuses learned very quickly, even when the people left the bristly stick at home and didn't bring the fish, they'd move happily towards their friends who had given them a delicious fish. And the people with the bristly stick, they'd either move away or blast them in the face with icy cold salt water.
They played a lot of tricks on their keepers, too, sort of bouncing food around or hiding or retreating. And one, Athena, that you met at the New England Aquarium, seemed to show a sort of bond. What made you think that you were connected to Athena?
Well, she was the first octopus I ever met, and I really didn't know what to expect. When Scott Dowd opened up the lid and let me touch her. Well, she slid over. She turned color with emotion. She turned red, which is the color of an excited octopus, both excited when they're mad or excited when they're happy. But she looked me in the face, and as I plunged my hands and arms into that icy cold water, her arms started boiling up, and her suckers began to attach to my hands and arms. But what let me know that she wasn't attacking me, that she was liking it, was one, she let me pet her head. And no one but staff had ever been given that privilege. And the other was that she turned white beneath my touch. And white is the color of a relaxed octopus.
It's like the mood ring of animals.
It's true. That's totally true. Except we don't know what all of the moods are. You know, because they can do spots, they can do stripes, they can be brown, they can be red. Some octopuses turn iridescent colors. Some are so invisible you can be looking right at the animal and not even know it's there.
One of the things that you return to over and over again in this kind of question of octopus intelligence is that octopuses have brains that are, in a sense, decentralized.
Yes, their brains are so different from
ours. Well, because they're spread all over their body. I mean, I don't understand.
Well, you wouldn't, looking at their brain. Goodness. I mean, just to give you an example, our brain, everyone knows what the human brain looks like. It looks like a walnut in its shell. Well, first of all, they don't have the shell, and they don't have the walnut. Their brain is a ring around their throat. Our brain has four lobes, each with different functions. But people are still arguing over how many an octopus has. There could be between 50 and 75, depending on the species and how you count the lobes. But beyond that, 3/5 of their neurons are not in their brains. Most of ours are in our brains, but most of theirs are in their arms. And what that means, for one thing, is if an octopus's arm is severed, which, don't worry, it can grow it back, the arm can go off and do stuff.
What?
The arm goes off and it can turn colors, it can catch prey, and it can take the prey and start sending it back down the arm. They pass it from sucker to sucker.
Yeah, like a conveyor
sucker.
Belt. That's one of the things that I learned.
Exactly, toward the mouth. But alas, the mouth is now far away. And some people have even suggested that octopuses may have some shy arms and some bold arms. So what is their consciousness like? What does it feel like to be an octopus? We don't know. And maybe we can't imagine. But just imagining it, I think, stretches our minds and lets us feel that consciousness is a bigger and more glorious thing than we may have imagined before.
Well, you're very immersive in this book. You learn how to scuba dive. You go to Mexico. You go to the South Pacific. What are some of the differences between those octopuses that you found in captivity and in the wild?
Well, there are different species, for one. I did not meet giant Pacific octopuses in the wild. That's practically a technical dive. It's so cold. But I did meet several species of tropical octopuses in Mexico and in French Polynesia. Now, the ones that I knew best were, in fact, the giant Pacific octopuses in captivity. And this is going to be the case just because it's very hard to go back to a place and see the octopus you saw yesterday again and again in the mm-hmm. wild. But the octopus that I spent time with the most in the wild was an individual we called Mary Lou. And like the octopuses I knew in captivity, she was very curious. She reached out to touch me twice, to taste me with her suckers. And the great thing was, unlike in captivity, she kind of showed me around her place. Hmm. You could swim around the ocean with this octopus and watch her hunting for food, changing colors, probing crevices with her arms, thinking about who we were, wondering about us enough to want to touch us. And that was magnificent. But the ones I knew in captivity, because I got to know them better, I think I had a much deeper understanding of who they were than someone who you've just met for, you know, a matter of days.
Octopuses don't generally breed in captivity. In fact, they're often displayed alone because of their tendency to fight and even kill each other. But the aquarium in Seattle is uniquely positioned to host a special Valentine's Day event. What happened there?
Oh, yes. This was great. I got to spend Valentine's Day at the Octopus Blind Date. And with my husband's full permission, went off to watch octopuses have sex. And this is the steamy sex scene in the book. In fact, I mean, it's so steamy that when I was describing it to my friend Jody, we're on a train going to New York, and all of a sudden we noticed the whole car had grown very, very quiet. But what they do at the Seattle Aquarium is once a year, they introduce an adult male octopus who is ready to mate with an adult female octopus who presumably is ready to mate. And I say presumably because it's not always a success. Octopus mating can sometimes be the dinner date from hell in which one octopus eats the other one, and this has happened. But for the octopus blind date that I attended, It was a huge success. In fact, it was one of the most loving, erotic things I'd ever seen. I mean, just think of it. An octopus has three hearts, so six hearts are beating as one, and 16 arms, and all of those suckers, and lots of lube. I mean, it was quite exciting to see them literally fly into each other's arms and change color with emotion. And then they both turned white. They were very relaxed. One guy said, now they're having the cigarette. And they lay in each other's arms for hours. And it was lovely to stand there and watch the public go by. And I didn't hear any snickers or any snide remarks. Instead, I heard people say, like, oh, it's beautiful. And so many people went there since it was Valentine's Day with their husbands, with their wives, with their dates. Also, a lot of school children who I think just went away confused. I mean, they cannot understand human sex, much less cephalopod sex. But the adults who watched this were deeply moved by this because this is something that octopuses do at the end of their lives. It's a completion of their lives, a crescendo of their lives. And many people, thanks to the excellent naturalists who were explaining what was going on, seemed to understand this. And what was super wonderful about it is that because at the Seattle Aquarium the animals live right outside the sound where they live in the wild, the aquarium releases the octopuses so that the females can then lay eggs and start the cycle all over again.
Yeah.
Well, I'll leave it to readers to find out whether you came to proof or a conclusion about the soul of an octopus. But in the book, I think you discovered something of your own soul.
Well, I certainly did. Doing this book changed my life profoundly. And, you know, who better to shepherd you along for some transformation than an octopus who can transform like no one else? One, they showed me the sea. I'd been a naturalist for 50 years, and I'd never discovered, really, you know, 70% of the surface of the globe is covered with ocean, but 90% of the habitable space on the globe is ocean. And it's the octopus that showed me the ocean, that inspired me to learn scuba and really be able to dive beneath the waves for the first time, and that's changed my life. But also it really changed my way of thinking about thinking. The people who I met at the New England Aquarium, these are people who could tame anacondas. These are people who could smell fish stress. And these are people who showed me how to see the dreams of electric eels. This profoundly changed my way of seeing that the world is so much more alive than we ever dreamed, so much more conscious and full of delight. Because all these animals love their lives as we love ours. And this is something that the octopus has showed me.
That was author and naturalist Cy Montgomery speaking with Virginia Prescott. Cy Montgomery's new book is called The Soul of an Octopus, and you can find out more about it at wordofmouthradio.org.